Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com from coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boy Flip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello, the Borgeses.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Tommy Bird Ridge Winery.
Joy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vibach Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWineMaker.com. I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Belvoir Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Boy, that timer is way off on the intro. I don't know if I cut on and off the intro or not. I don't believe I did, but I was disconnected a couple times before the show started here, and I had to sign back in to try to get in properly here. But if you hear some weirdness at the beginning of the program, that's why I had to sign back in. I don't know what happened there either. No, hope it's nothing serious or anything. So, we're on. Here we are. It is July the 2nd, 2015. If you are listening to this any other day except July 2nd, 2015, then you are not live. If you are listening to it on July 2nd, 2015, and it is 3 minutes after 7 Eastern Time, then we are live. And you can call me, 646-727-3235. And just, you'll go in the green room. Actually, I'll go and hold. I'll go check and see what you have to say, and we'll bring you on the program. So if you want to talk or chat or anything, or I'll be more than happy to. A couple of days, we have ourselves coming up the 4th of July, the holiday, Independence Day. So be safe. I'll repeat that again later, too, but be safe. If you live in California and you listen to this before the 4th, no fireworks. Don't want to burn up the state. It's dry. There's no water. Other places, be careful. Don't do anything dangerous. My grandfather was horribly dangerous with firecrackers. I mean, he would sit there and he would light a firecracker and throw it in your lap. It was, you know, I mean, he was dangerous with firecrackers. But that's back when, you know, all the uncles and everybody used to laugh about that, but oh well. They've all passed on now, and we're not as scared to be around firecrackers as we were then. Got some stuff to talk to you about tonight. Last week, I brought up the question, about the color of red wine bottles. And as I was doing some research on it, I thought, why don't we talk about bottles? I don't believe I've done a program just on wine bottles. I may have, and if I have, then it's been in the past. Oh, again, Mike's not with us. He's tied up in his real job. But he, if he were here, he would be able to tell me if we've done some. He'd search and let me know. But I don't remember talking about wine bottles. I know we've talked about lots of different things and all that, but we haven't talked about wine bottles per se. Just, you know, where they come from, history and stuff like that. So we're going to do that a bit tonight and try to fill you in on some stuff about wine bottles that you may or may not know, but it's always interesting to find out some of the stuff here. So first, though, I got some little bits and pieces of information for you, although we're going to start with our real estate portion of the show. And we need music. We really do need some sort of real estate music. But, you know, what is good real estate music? I don't know. So, let's see. We don't have anything there. Don't have that there. No, we don't have anything in our clips to put on there. Here we go. Real estate section.
Ooh.
Okay. That'll work for tonight. Again, if you find something here that's interesting, if you find something that you have not heard and you want to know more information about it, get in touch. You can call me tonight. You can email me. You can get in touch with me through the All About Wine Facebook page. It's Facebook/AllAboutWine. All sorts of ways. So I will be giving you more information on any real estate information you'd like to know. First, Colibri Ridge Winery and Vineyard. Now, I may have talked about this before, but this is 21.3 acres, 5.8 acre vineyard, 3,600 square foot winery building, including tasting room. Equipment is included. The vineyard is planted in Tempranillo, Syrah, Primitivo. Why do they call it Primitivo and not Zinfandel? And Viognier. Only $950,000. I mean, when we're below the $1 million mark, it's always a good deal. I'm not sure where Colibri Ridge is, though, so I don't have an answer for it. It's California, but I think it's the foothills. There's 394-acre vineyard land, South Oregon, 285 plus or minus water rights, river frontage, $3.4 million. Get in touch if you want to know more information. 93 plus acres. This is divided into four parcels. This is, again, I've read this one before. I know I have, but it's always a good one to share again. Rare opportunity to own one of the original Napa founding family's property. First time for sale in over 100 years. 93 plus acres, including four joining properties for that amount, 23 plus acres planted, and the remaining is open for development for vineyards, estates, winery locations, whatever you'd like to do. Resting on the valley floor in the heart of the Napa wine country, just south of Yountville, in the Oak Knoll District, AVA, which, you know, is probably a sub of the Napa AVA. So there you go. No price, no anything listed on it. If you have to ask, one of those things, I'm sure, on the Napa floor. It's outrageous the prices some of those Napa wineries are. But again, get in touch with me. I will give you more information or contact information. Here's another one. Winery, B&B, tasting room, and vineyard. A whole package. 20 plus acres, 14 acre vineyard, a two-story custom home in the middle of all the wineries and tasting rooms, $1.95 million. Oregon Winery and Oregon Vineyard Opportunity. 500. Wait a minute. There's the ones I read for the real estate is I get this a couple times a month, and they started sending me a with all the information that they send out in these this classified. It's called Wine Country Classifieds. It's located in actually Napa is the area that it's in, but the Wine Country Classifieds is just that, it's classified. It's got all sorts of stuff in it. You can buy grapes and help wanted and bulk wine and compliance information and vineyard equipment and barrels and tanks and just a whole bunch of stuff on it. If you're interested in the Wine Country Classified, you can go online at info@winerysite.com and they can answer your emails on that. But now they're sending out a small little email to me with the Wine Country Classifieds, which is sort of cool. But a lot of the stuff they have in the paper, too. So, 560 acres of prime Oregon land fronting the Umpqua River near Roseburg. 36 acres, premium varietals planted with at least 200 additional cleared acres plantable on great soil. Water rights already in place, which is important out west. Four parcels with small cottage. All right, so there you go. No price. More information, contact me. Tasting room and warehouse. Tasting room, production warehouse, or bonded wine storage facility, along with untitled 2006 mobile home. Now, real estate, approximately 1,300 square foot tasting room, 3,200 square foot warehouse, and 1,500 square foot home with three phase 440 power building could be used for multiple purposes on a major intersection on Highway 12 in the heart of Wine Valley between Yakima, Washington and Prosser. Or I think that's pronounced Prosser or Prosser. Tri-Cities and Walla Walla, Washington. So up in the Washington area there, you have yourself possibility there. Sounds like a good place for it, too. 37 acres, plus or minus, in Sherman Island Vineyard. Sherman Island Vineyard. Three parcels, 3 acres in Merlot. Let's see if there's more information on here. Yes, there is. 37 acres, approximately 3 acres Merlot, tractor and other winemaking equipment. Ag 80, ABC wine growers permit, and use permit for ag tourism. Very good. $2,590,000. So, there's the additional information. Large event center, perfect for a winery. It's zoned for ag with single family home. Each lot can be sold separately. So, you got 37 acres, so different lots. So, if you interested, again, get in touch. I will be more than happy to give you more information on that one. Here's something that's interesting. Wine tour company for sale in Oregon. Now, if you don't want to do the wine, this is something that is very interesting. Fun and popular wine tour business for sale. Cascadia Tours, started by Oregon wine tourism expert, and is perfectly positioned for growth there. They own 200 of the businesses and cannot put the time that this one needs. It says, imagine sharing the very best of Oregon wine country with appreciative visitors while tooling around scenic Yamhill County in a beautiful 11-passenger Mercedes Sprinter. Our years of winery contacts, experience, and expertise are part of the package. We'll get you totally up to speed and support you with a terrific departure point on Main Street in Carlton. There is lots of business to be had, and the knowledge we offer will make you top-notch guides in no time. with 10 out of 10 five-star ratings from TripAdvisor, Cascadia Tours custom painted luxury van meets an international travel standard and is a welcome sight to both customers and winery owners alike. This package includes Cascadia brand, Android LG smartphone, and published company telephone number. Beautiful 2012 Mercedes van with very low miles. CascadiaTours.com/CascadiaWineTours.com and the website, perfect trip advisor account and extended training. No price, but there you go. If you're looking for something to do besides run a winery, consider a tour group in Oregon for the wine. That sounds like that would be interesting. So there's another possibility for you if you're looking to be in the wine business. Southern Oregon Boutique Winery. The description states, own a piece of God's country. Award-winning wines produced at the Southern Oregon Boutique Winery on 102 acres, 15 acres of mature vineyards, 6 different varietals, winery and tasting room with kitchen and bath. Custom-built 2,685 square foot, 3-bedroom, 2-bath home overlooking the vineyards. Turnkey operation, all equipment included in sales, easy to expand production. All of this for only $2,750,000. So if you're interested, let me know. I will pass on the information to you. And, Placerville Apple Hill Vineyard. Adjacent to the famed Apple Hill region, this is a superb vineyard site with a history of producing high-quality fruit. 7 acres planted, 2 parcels, EID Ag Water, winery by right location. And winery estate for sale. Winery vineyard home in the Sierra foothills is for sale. And no other information than that. No price, no anything. But Sierra foothills, beautiful area there. If you've never been there, and it's gorgeous. Heading up toward Lake Tahoe in that area there. Going to Reno in that area. I'm not sure where. It's a little bit south of Reno. Award-winning winery in the Sierra Foothills, AVA. Parcel 1, turnkey Chetorn Winery on 32 acres. Parcel 2, established premium vineyard on 744 plus or minus acres, with 64 plus or minus acres already planted. Nominal opening bid, $500,000 per parcel. So $1 million get you both. The auction is passed. Oh, forget it. It's no good anymore. The auction was June the 26th. So I was late on that. So we can't get that for you. And I think we might be done with our real estate tonight. Let's see. The real estate loans. Oh, real estate loans are available. If you want loans and you're looking at getting loans for your vineyard venture, then real estate loans are available too. So that is something else that I can pass on to contact for that. And that's it for tonight on our real estate loans or our real estate event. So, and let's see, what can we do to show when I say that's it for tonight? Well, nope, there's nothing there. I saw one. There you go. How about that? Yeah, I know. Sorry, no more real estate for tonight. Sorry. But a couple of weeks, 3-4 weeks, we'll have some more real estate for you. Let's see. Where is my other info? Oh, here we go. This is just stuff that I thought you might be interested in. Top beverage brands in the United States. Number one, Coca-Cola. And this is in U.S. millions of dollars, $35,797. Pepsi at $21 million. Red Bull, Johnny Walker, Nescafe, Bud Light, Heineken, Motul, M-O-U-T-A-L, I'm not familiar with that. Budweiser, Sprite, Mountain Dew, Asahi, Skoll, Hennessy, Fanta, and Corona Extra. These are the top beverage brands. No wines in the top list there. Top Facebook pages by the number of fans. Coca-Cola Company is number one with 90,083,894. Red Bull is second with 42 million, almost 43. Starbucks Coffee, then PepsiCo, Nescafe, Monster Energy at 23 million, Heineken 18 million, Sprite 18 million, Dr. Pepper 14 million, and Dunkin' Donut at 12 million or 12.5 million on Facebook page. Wow, boy. 90 million for Coca-Cola Company. 90 million people. Like that. That's just amazing. Adding some blush, the Palm Bay International Importer announced that the newest arrival from the Riscato wine family, Riscato Rosé Dulce, the new blush varietal joins Riscato Rosso Dulce and Riscato Bianca Dulce, which both are sweet, gently fizzy wines from northern Italy. Made from a blend of Pinot Noir and two native Italian grape varieties, Crotina and Terroldego, I guess. Riscato Rosé Dulce offers bright aromas of cherry and strawberry with a hint of cotton candy. Woo, that sounds interesting. A hint of cotton candy, which when you taste cotton candy, it's just sweet. So. Its low alcohol content of 8% by volume and sweet palate are perfectly balanced by refreshing tusks of effervescence. The new wine is available nationwide for a suggested retail price of $11.99 for the 750 milliliter bottles. So there you go. It looks like a screw cap on it, too. They have a picture here of it. That might be interesting. There's just a nice wine to have this summer. There's one you can have with... you know, your summer picnics and stuff like that. Pick up one tomorrow before 4th of July, Saturday. It sounds like it might be fun and it might be interesting. With hints of cotton candy. That would be fun. So, newest one there. Behringer is now allowing customers to try their wines before they buy it without even taking a sip. Okay, something new for Behringer. In April, the wine label started a new sampling initiative in Kroger stores in 20 states. We don't have a Kroger here in Florida. And Kroger stores in 20 states that presents consumers with flavor strips for the label's three most popular wines. The Chardonnay, White Zinfandel, and Cabernet Sauvignon. Now, that's how this works. They're on the... shelving. They're shelving displays, not taking up shelf space for the wine, mind you, but, you know, sticking out. You might have seen these things. Who was it that had those for a long time? Was it Walmart or something? I don't know. I asked my engineer, remember those little tags? Oh, I think it was Publix, wasn't it, that had the little tags out and you can save on this and put a little tag off of it? Or was that Walmart? Walmart? Okay, it was Walmart. So, something like that. They stick out on the shelves there. The flavor strips test station is mounted to the wine shelf for easy use and dispenses the individually wrapped non-alcohol flavor strips that allow for the consumer trial at any hour of the day. So, you walk in there and there it is, right there. I mean, it doesn't have to, you know, it's not only certain times. The taste stations also are equipped with cutouts of the discarded packaging, reducing clutter in the store. It says, the company anticipates the program will be adopted by multiple retailers in the coming months. So if you attend a Kroger store or something like that and you see one of those strips, then that's brand new there. A tasting for Behringer, Chardonnay, White Zinfandel, and a Cabernet Sauvignon. That's interesting. I hope it does come down here. Oh, Publix lets us do that too. If you're up there anywhere and you're listening to me, grab each of the strips and send it to me. The website, the winery website is address is on there. So send it to me at the winery. That would be interesting. I like to see something like that, see how it works. Or maybe Publix down here will pick it up since they are so big too. And we'll see what's happening with that. So something new, something innovative that they're doing to try to get people to taste flavors. No alcohol, mind you. No alcohol, but it is something that will get people, hopefully, to pick up the wine. Bottles. We're going to talk about bottles for the rest of the next half hour here. Last week, I mentioned something about colors of red wine bottles. And I started to do research. And as I was doing research, I'm going, oh, that's interesting. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, that. So I decided I'd just do a program on bottles tonight and talk to you about bottles. Different sources, a lot of different things I found, a lot of different sources I found, and a lot of quite interesting things I ran across. Wine bottles, generally made of glass, although we have talked about all sorts of other closures before. There's paper, plastic, PVC, all sorts of different things coming out in wine bottles now. But the most common and the most used is still the glass. 750 milliliter is the standard size, which is 26 imperial fluid ounces or 25.4 U.S. fluid ounces. The things I saw said 25. One of them said 25.5. One of them said 25.4. It's 25.4 I've measured, and that's the standard that's usually used. But sealed with a cork, screw cap, or any other type of cork derivatives. The traditional one is the 750, but there are lots of other sizes of the bottles, various usage and various things. Why? What is all this difference? Well, a lot of them are used in different countries, a lot of the smaller ones. We don't see them here in the United States at all. A lot of them are a traditional one for areas and stuff, and we don't run across it so much anywhere except just in for certain sizes and certain standard things. And that's about it you find on that. But there are lots of different wine bottle sizes and a variety of different ones that are used for all sorts of stuff. Some of the real big ones that you find in wine bottles are used for state dinners. The Prime Minister of England invites the President of France over for a dinner, and they'll probably use the great big bottles, the giant bottles, the Sauvignon or the Solomon or something like that, which is very large bottles that are poured using a rocking stand type thing. It reminds me of, everyone has seen those little duck head things that bob back and forth, and when it touches the water, it bobs back up again and all. This is something like the stance that they pour these. They don't just pour them right out of the bottle. They're too heavy, actually. You couldn't do it. So they're usually decanted into a smaller thing and then served like that. But these are, most of the bigger bottles are used in that way. But again, it's for state dinners and for different things. The different bottles, the Piccolo. Piccolo just means small in Italian. It's referred to as a quarter bottle, a pony, a snipe. I've heard that in the past. Or a split. I've heard all those different names. Pony usually just refers to a small item anyway, like a pony keg or something. It is used in champagne bottles and a few other bottles. You see them all the time, all over the place. They're usually, people come in and ask us if we have small bottles, and it's a 0.1875 liter. It's 875 milliliter. The quarter bottle, which is 0.2 liter, used for champagnes mainly. 0.25 Chopin, French unit of bottling, usually from the Bordeaux region. Demi, half in French, the demi, like a demi-tasse, half. Also known as a half bottle, that's 375 milliliter. The 1887. If you, the very first one I read, the split, that's the new little bottles that they're coming out now that they're selling in the little four packs in the store. And a lot of those are the 1875 size. It's just a drink. The tenth, 1/10 of a U.S. gallon. You don't usually find that in wine, but there is bottles out there for the tenth. The half liter is a 0.5 liter. The Jenny, also known as a 50 cl bottle, used for Tokay, Sauternes, Jurons, as well as several other types of sweet wines. So the demi is what you're going to find in those. It's a 500 ml. Which is quite common. Actually, my port is bottled in a 500 ml bottle. The next one is the 0.62 Cleveland. Not used a lot. Primarily used for the Vigneron. Let me say Vigneron. Let me see what this is. Vigneron yellow wine, special characteristic type of wine, white wine made from the Jura region of eastern France. It is similar to a dry Fino sherry. So there you go. So the size there is basically used for that. Okay, the 750 milliliter, that's your standard bottle. You find that everywhere. Everybody's familiar with the 750 milliliter. 757 milliliter, that's 1/5 of a U.S. gallon. Not usually used for anything, just for your general purposes. You know, your whiskey bottles come in your fists, so that's just only 0.007 of a milliliter more than what we're used to. The 1 liter bottle, popular size for Austrian wines. Don't see those a lot. I don't know if you can find those 1 liter bottles in the stores or not. Probably can. I mean, I'm sure they may ship them. 1.5 milliliters is a Magnum. That's just two standard bottles. You can see those in liquor stores and stuff all over the place. 2.25 is called the Marie Jeanie, also known as a Tregnum or Tappet Hen in the port trade. The 3.0 or the 4.5, Jeroboam, also known as a Double Magnum 3.0, is the name Jeroboam as from the biblical first king of the northern kingdom. Jeroboam has different meanings, so it indicates different sizes for different regions in France. So if you say Jeroboam to, say, the Bordeaux region or the Burgundy region, it will probably refer to different sizes, hence the 3.0 or the 4.5, just depending on what region you're in. Rehoboam is 4.5. This is the first king of separate Judea, biblical. The Imperial 6.0. It's standard 8 bottles. 9.0 liter Salamanzer. That's biblical again, Assyrian king. The 12.0 liter Balthazar, or Belshazzar, one of the three wise men, according to legend. 15.0 liter bottle, 15-liter bottle, which is 20 standard 750 bottles. Nebuchadnezzar, that's again the biblical king of Bethlehem. Or Babylon, I said Bethlehem, Babylon. 18 liter, 24 bottles. Melchor, I believe it's pronounced. I think it's a hard C on that. Again, one of the three wise men. 18 liter, 24 bottles. Solomon, both Melchor and Solomon are used. Usually the Solomon is used for champagnes more than anything, whereas the Melchor is used for champagnes and Burgundy, Bordeaux, all around. Solomon, the king of Israel, son of David. Sovereign is 26.25 liters, or 35 standard bottles. This was reportedly created by Tattinger in 1988 for the launch of the world's largest cruise ship then, the Venier Sovereign of the Seas. And since then, they've made bigger ones, but Tattinger Champagne made that especially to launch the ship. 27 liter, 36 standard bottles is a primate or Goliath. Again, stoned by David. This is biblical reference. And the 30 liter or 40 standard bottles, Melchizedek or Midas, king of Solomon. So those are the most of the standard bottles. Now, there may be a few floating out there that are specially made or something like that, but that's pretty much what you're going to find on bottles there. Shape of bottles. Port, sherry, Bordeaux varieties, usually straight side, high shoulders, pronounced punt. And I'll talk about punt in a little bit here. The sherries usually have a larger neck to collect residue, which is the purpose of it. Burgundy and Rhone bottles, tall bottles with sloping shoulders and a smaller punt. And it says Schlegel variety, used in Germany, more slender and elongated. The Rhine bottle, Moselle and Alsace varieties, narrow, tall, with no punt, usually flat bottom on it. The punt, I guess I should have described what that is. I just think everyone knows, but if you don't, the punt is that hole, is that indentation in the bottom, is that thing poking up from the bottom there into the bottle of wine. I'll address the punt in a little bit here, but that's the punt. Champagne and other sparkling wines are usually put in a thick-walled bottle made with pronounced punts and sloping shoulders. And German wines from Franconia has the Boxbeutel bottle. And I have no idea what a box. Oh, there it is. The Boxbeutel is a very wide bottle. I guess the best way to describe the Boxbeutel bottle is with the rosé. Oh, geez. What is the name of... Oh, let me ask the engineer again. Engineer, the rosé, Matus, thank you. Matus rosé bottles, those are the classic Boxbeutel size or shape bottles, the Matus rosé. And the Chianti and some other Italian wines are found with, straw baskets, more for everyday use. The higher grade Chianti producers have switched to the Bordeaux type bottles. So it's just like, but if you can still get the straw wrapped ones just for fun. A lot of wineries, a lot of areas, a lot of individual regions choose bottles that will present themselves as unique. They'll pick a certain type bottle. The Rhine region is usually always brown bottles. The Moselle region is usually always blue bottles. If you see a blue bottle from Germany, then it's always from the Moselle region. So different things like this. Sparkling wines usually don't change too much, though. That's the only thing that you're not going to see a whole lot of difference in, simply because sparkling wines have the pressure, the thicker walls, and it, you know, being handled, you don't want the things to shatter or something. So the champagne bottles tend to have more strength and also the bigger punch for the strength also. Colors, traditional colors on bottles. And again, we have colors that are used. Traditional colors used in wine bottles are the dark green for reds, light green for white, and clear colorless for sweet wines. The Burgundy and the Rhone, dark green. Moselle and Alsace usually have the dark to medium green, although they've been doing some traditional amber. The Rhine amber, although some producers use the traditional green, like I was just saying. And I said that backwards, didn't I? It's the Rhone who is green, and Moselle usually the amber, the brown. Champagne usually comes in dark to medium green bottles, and some of the rosé champagnes are usually colorless, so you can see that they are rosé. And a lot of clear bottles are being used a lot all over the place now. You're getting away from the dark green bottles. Many white wines still come in green, but usually you find the white, the clear bottles used more and more. The foils or the capsules. It's made with PVC. It is heat shrunk onto it. There is aluminum that's being used on some of them. Sealing wax is also being used. They'll take it and dip it into wax and let it set and dry, and then you have your wax tops. I'm sure you've seen that. We have a winery not too far from us here, down in Brandon, that uses sealing wax on all their wines. And they recycle. They ask you to bring it back after you cut it off. They throw it in a big pot and get it hot again, melt it down, and reuse it. Not good for anything else. You're not going to ingest it or anything, so why not? The foils traditionally were made of lead, but again, the toxic lead could cause problems when you poured the wine and different things, and it got to be ungood. So they have been switching over. The lead is pretty much out of it. By the mid-1990s, it was no more lead and almost other things. Now, the tin has been used since the 90s, and that's worked well. As, like I say, PVC or aluminum, you can find some aluminum in some wine. The United States banned lead foils on all domestic and imported wines in 1996. So you won't find any lead ones out there unless you get yourself a very old bottle or you have something that's aging. But anything new, well, since 1996, so we're looking at 19 years, it's been banned. Punts, that hole in the bottom of the, or that indentation in the bottom of the bottle. I had people, and more than one, I don't know where this rumor started, but I've had more than one people come in and ask me if the size of the punt meant that it was a better wine. And I, no, it doesn't, but I said, wow. I said, if that were the case, I'd have a punt that would go almost up to the neck. I mean, wow, look how good this is. The punt's real big on this. No, the punt has absolutely no indication of the quality of the wine. I've always heard that it's used to turn the bottles, riddling of champagne. You have your racks and racks of the traditional champagne that are fermenting in the bottles. You will get sediment on the bottle, on the edge where it's laying, where the bottom, it will settle down. So instead of forming a sediment line on all of your bottles, you turn them a quarter of a turn every periodically, and I don't know what the time frame is, but you turn them, and the people who turn these put their thumb in the punt and take their fingers and just turn it just a quarter of a turn is all it takes. But they're very good and very fast, and they do it so fast it's like a sound, a riddling sound. That's where the term riddling comes from, and that's what I've always heard that it's used for. But there are, and this particular site gives numerous different explanations, which I find interesting. It is one of them is historic remnant from the era when the bottles were free blowing using a blowpipe and a puntil. When you take off the puntil, it would leave a little piece of the glass on the end of the bottle. So they would put the punt in there to bury the little piece of the glass so it wouldn't scratch the table or whatever it was you were setting it on, so it would be solid to set it on. But, you know, mass production of punts, I don't know. It also, the next one, had a function of keeping the bottle from tumbling over. Flat bottoms only need a small imperfection to make it unstable, so therefore the dimple historically allowed for a larger margin of error. Yeah, okay. Next one, I've heard this one before, consolidates the sediments in the thick ring at the bottom of the bottle, preventing much of it from being poured into the glass. It's more functional than historical, considering that most of the modern wines have little or no sediment because they're all fined and filtered. It increases the strength of the bottle, allowing it to hold high pressure of sparkling wines and champagnes. Now, that I can believe because the punt might give a little bit more strength. Again, riddling, I mentioned that. It consumes some volume of the bottle, allowing the bottle to appear larger for the same amount of wine, which may impress the purchaser. Never heard that, but I can understand that. You have this big old tall bottle with a big punt in it. People, I'm sure, would be impressed. And this one I've never heard before. I think this is folklore. Taverns had a steel pin set vertically in the bar. The empty bottle would be thrust down, bottom end down, into the pin, puncturing a hole in the top of the punt, therefore guaranteeing the bottle could not be refilled. It was done. It was empty. So, yeah. Also prevents the bottle from resonating as easily, causing vibration, decreasing the likelihood of shattering during transportation. You know, like used dividers. Also allows the bottle to be more easily stacked end to end. Anyone out there have ever stacked your bottles using a punt? I that is one of those where I'm thinking, oh, what? Bottles could be stacked in cargo holds on ships without rolling around and breaking. Yeah, okay, but you know, you're not gonna stack, you know, 20 cases of individual bottles, sticking them in the punt in the end. So, I don't know. And it makes the bottle easier to clean prior to filling with wine. When a stream of water is injected into the bottle and impacts the punt, it is distributed throughout the bottom of the bottle and removes residue. All right. Possibly on that, too. But some of these, you know, I've, like I said, the only one I've heard and the one that I tend to always believe and one that I always pass on to people is the one about the riddling. So I may be wrong. Who knows? I may be completely wrong on that. This was something, too, that I found very interesting. Born July 11, 1603, and died June 11, 1665, a Sir Kenelm Digby was an English courtier and diplomat. He was a philosopher, a leading Roman Catholic intellectual, and a blacklist, whatever that is. I don't know. Well, let me find out what that is, a blacklist. A blacklist Thomas White follower. So that's what a Black Oyster is, one who followed Thomas White teachings. He wrote many magazines and stuff and many things, but one of the things he is accredited with is inventing the modern bottle. I can't find what year it was here, but he is considered as somewhat of an eccentric by his contemporaries, partly because of his personality, but partly because of his interest in different scientific matters. He's considered the, well, where is that? I saw that earlier. And he considered as the inventor of the modern bottle. So, for what it's worth. Kenelm, K-E-N-E-L-M, Kenelm Digby, D-I-G-B-Y, 1665 he died, 1603 he was born. So, something else about bottles, which I found extremely interesting. A brief history of the bottles. Bottles started many years ago. Oh, here we go. Bottle anatomy. They are actually got labels and names for every part of a bottle. The finish, the top with the little ring around the top. Now, that little ring, I've heard, and I haven't found this in any of the text I was reading, but that little ring on the top of a bottle, I heard that before corks and stuff became popular and different ways to close bottles, they used to close them with cloth or cheesecloth or leather or any number of things that you just draped over the top of the bottle, and you would tie it on. You would use string or whatever you had to tie it onto the top of the bottle, and that little ring around the top, that little thing you fill on top, would keep the string from sliding off. It would hit that, and it would keep the whatever you were using, cloth or leather or whatever, on the top of the bottle without slipping off. So, and I couldn't find anything to describe any of that. I checked and couldn't find anything that denied or confirmed what I'd heard, but oh well. The finish is what that top part called. The neck, that's where the cork goes in. That's what, you know, you fill your wine up to the neck. The shoulder, this is the where it starts expanding out, and it could vary any number of sizes on the shoulder. The label panel is what they call the face of it. The label panel is the area where the labels go, obviously. And the body is the widest part of the bottle. That goes from right below the shoulders down to the bottom. And then the punt, the indentation from the bottom. So that is the anatomy of a wine bottle. And let's see, the wine bottle, it goes into a little bit of history here, which I'm not going to tell you the history of wine bottles. But I did want to cover one other thing here, though. I was throwing it back. Blue bottle trees or bottle trees. People have told me that they do bottle trees all the time. And I said, oh, that's a cool idea. But it's more than just an idea. It's been around for a long time. Our port bottles are blue. They're blue triangle bottles. And a lot of people come in and get them so they can make a bottle tree. The origin of the bottle tree is believed to get their roots in the Congo area of Africa in the 9th century AD. And now, that seems old for bottles to be around there, but I don't know. The practice was brought over by slaves who hung blue bottles from trees and huts as talismans to ward off evil spirits. But after a lot of research into it, it's believed that the bottle trees and their lore go back much further and originate further north. It is believed that the superstitions surrounding them were embraced by most ancient cultures, including Europeans. Although glass was made deliberately as early as 3500 BC in northern Africa, hollow glass bottles became appearing around 1600 BC in Egypt and Mesopotamia. Clear glass was invented in Alexandria around 100 AD. Back then, tales began to circulate that spirits could live in bottles. Probably people heard sounds caused by wind blowing over the bottle openings, which would scare you. Yeah, you can, you have a bunch of bottles sitting out and by the door, and all of a sudden the wind blows, and you can probably hear a whistling sound. It is believed that the spirits are dazzled by the colors of the bottles in the sun. Once they enter the bottle, they can't find their way out, much like fireflies. Legend had it that empty glass bottles placed outside the home could capture roving or usually evil spirits at night, and the spirits would be destroyed the next day in the sunshine. Blue became the favorite choice of bottle tree lovers. Many believe that the blue bottles also contain some healing qualities. So whatever your color choice for your bottle tree, know that it is from a long and proud tradition of trapping and keeping bad things, including the blues. Bottle trees have been featured as accessories in most of the prestigious flower garden and flower show garden displays all over the world. Glass bottles, which have long been placed in windows for color, a poor man's stained glass, are also commonly used to line flower beds. And so, bottle trees, it's a very popular thing. Now, I've had a lot of people come in and tell me they have bottle trees. A lot of people come in and say they have bottle trees. I had a lady come in who says she takes wine bottles, colored wine bottles, and turns them upside down along her walk going out into the garden and stuff like this. So like half of it's above ground, like a lining to it, but it's not, you know, side by side, a little space between all that. And really cool. She showed me a picture of what she did. And it really is pretty cool how it looks. I've had a lot of people come and tell me they do bottle trees, though, and the blue bottles. They say, oh, I love the blue bottles for my bottle tree. And I just never thought too much of it until I read this article and realized that blue bottles are really the best thing for bottle trees because it confuses the spirits and it gives them makes for better getting rid of the spirits and all that stuff and uplifting your spirits. So, but there's a little bit about bottles tonight. I wanted to talk about it. I asked. So basically, one of the articles said that the reason that the bottles are dark colored is to keep the ultraviolet rays out of the bottles or out of the wine in the bottles, which sounds great and wonderful. But, you know, every time somebody says, I'm going to keep the ultraviolet rays out, you're storing your wine in areas that aren't going to be in the sun anyway. Why would you really be concerned about the ultraviolet rays? I don't know. It just always seems like an odd thing to me that you would put your bottles in, just keep up the ultraviolet rays. But hey, you know, whatever floats your boat. So that'll be it for tonight. Thank you for listening. Appreciate you coming on to the show, listening to the show, and hope you learned something. We'll be back on next week, which will be, oh, where's my little calendar? My calendar book is not here like it usually is. Now, what's next Thursday? The 9th? Next Thursday, the 9th, we'll be back on. And nothing happening at the winery this weekend. as far as festivals or anything. 4th of July, Independence Day. Everyone, please, please be safe out there. Drive safely. Don't text and drive, for heaven's sakes. I was coming home last week, and I was by a police car, and the policeman was texting. I you know, it just drove me nuts. I really did. I could not believe that I was seeing that. And if I was doing it and he saw me, he'd probably pull me over. But here he was texting. He really was. I mean, it wasn't like playing with his computer like they do, but it was actually texting as he was driving. He was holding his phone up so he can see the road and the text at the same time. I was beside myself, which made it even harder to drive. But it was, don't text and drive. And not anytime. Don't text and drive. It's dangerous. It's, you know, don't do it. So have a safe holiday and enjoy. I read something, an outrageous number of hot dogs will be consumed Saturday. An outrageous number of hot dogs. It blew my mind, you know, millions. I mean, it was in the millions of hot dogs that will be consumed Saturday. So be safe out there. The winery will be open Saturday until 4. So if you're in the area visiting relatives or anything, swing on by, say hey, and have yourself a great week. We'll see you next Thursday, the 11th at 7 o'clock Eastern Time, and be safe.
Welcome to the talk show dedicated. Whoop.
That was the wrong one. That was the start. I wanted the ending one here. Here we go. Bye.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida States Winery. Florida States Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida States Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@floon.com. That's corp@floon.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.